11 o'clock hour here on Cody and Gold. Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Coming up in 20 minutes, we'll get to the trash of the day. We're also about 8 minutes away from talking about all three locals in college football. All three got a win, but nobody has a bigger game, period, than the Missouri Tigers this weekend. And we'll talk about the implications of their game. They're in Tuscaloosa this weekend, taking on Alabama. Massive playoff ramifications for both schools. But obviously, in particular, we'll be talking about Missouri. So that's coming up in a little bit. You can hit us up on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. And yes, as we've been reminding you guys for weeks and weeks and weeks now, if you're going to be in Las Vegas this weekend for Chiefs and Raiders, and you're flying in on Friday, or maybe you're there even earlier, we will be broadcasting live out at Circa Las Vegas Thursday and Friday. Stop by the show. Stop by our happy hour. It's Friday from 7 to 9 there at the Overhang Bar. It's, I think, on the second level of the casino there. It is free to join the party. Just got RSVP. We'll send you a link if you want one still to that same text line. That'll get you a free cocktail. That'll get you to win tickets and transportation to the game on Sunday. That'll also get you entered to win a day bed at the awesome stadium swim poolside, 143-foot screen, watching, we'll have some NBA action this week while we're there. We'll have, game one of the World Series on Friday night, a lot of college football, and then obviously NFL Sunday as well. So it's going to be a fun weekend out in Vegas. Let's talk about Mahomes in particular, though. We asked Vinny about the grading of his performance, and acknowledge, I don't disagree with him, that ultimately winning is all that matters, so I'm not worried about Patrick Mahomes. I gave the Steelers comparison just because we have been, and I don't know, maybe I phrased it poorly. I'm not saying that it's a bad thing that they're... My point is that comparing them to Steelers and how they're winning is not a bad thing. People shouldn't be insulted by that, is what I was trying to get at.
Sure.
When it comes to that. To me, they are winning in a very similar fashion. Nobody's saying the Steelers are better than the Chiefs. It's the style of how they're winning is all I was trying to say. But for Mahomes, if I were to ask you to actually assign a grade to his performance heading into week 8, what would that be? Knowing everything that's been going on.
So I thought pretty hard about this because I didn't want to just give a flippant answer, and I wanted to give an answer that I thought was true to what I've seen this season out of Patrick Mahomes. This is going to sound really low or really high, I guess, based on the statistical season that he's had. So I understand. A B. And you're like, how, man? How are you going to give a guy who has 6 touchdowns and 8 interceptions on a league average offense, right? Points per game wise. They're probably around league average. I haven't looked so far, but I'm sure that they're around league average again. I understand why you would say that. How can I possibly think that? How is it a B? Because if you look at it, the 13th ranked offense right now, he is throwing to a wide receiver who's cut by the Patriots, a team that stinks, a running back who is a free agent who wasn't even picked up by the Browns, who stink. Justin Watson was cut 3 years ago by the Bucks. I mean, it's his collection of weapons is a cast of misfits, castaways, island of misfit toys. People, there are national people who say Sky Moore doesn't belong on an NFL roster. I mean, it's not a group of wide receivers that would blow you away. The offensive line play has been good. It's been pretty good. Not great, but pretty good. And when you put the collection of people he's been around, honestly, I'm impressed he's played this well. The interceptions is the only reason I wouldn't give it an A. He's thrown, I would say, 4 interceptions. I'd be like, I don't like that one. The other 4 are the normal kind of interceptions that happen in any NFL given season. 2 in the last 2 weeks that have been tipped off a defensive lineman's hand, and 1 when his wide receiver fell down. So sorry, I can explain a few of those away too. There were a couple in the early part of the season. You're like, woof, who was that going to? Outside of that, he's played really good football, I think. They're one of the most efficient offenses at moving the balls in the NFL. And again, they don't have a lot of weapons. A B. It's fine with me.
Yeah, look, I let you go first because you're the professor, as we know. And so we've now determined how tough of a grader you are for your students at UMKC. I think you're a really lenient and
you think I'm too easy?
Thoughtful and understanding grader, which is not a bad thing by any means. Look, some of your reasoning is also where I'm at. I guess graded it a little bit tougher. I said C+ when we were doing this exercise blindly before the show. C+ for me, for the same reasons. Like, factor in who the hell he's throwing the ball to. Let's be real about that. Also recognize, though, that if we're doing a grading scale, like the stats aren't there, but what he did on Sunday in San Francisco is why I don't think you can have him any lower than where I have him, a C+. What I mean by that is,
I think if you're lower than that, you're just being a hater, I guess. For perfection.
What I mean by reason why I don't think he'd be below a C+ is his performance Sunday, where, as we said yesterday, the stat line lies a little bit about the performance, not the season long stats. Sunday, the game, essentially a game winning touchdown at one point, seemed like a game winning touchdown, right? But he had the fourth down touchdown. He had the run up the sideline. Those plays are still plays that nobody else is making. I'm sorry. Nobody else at quarterback is making those plays when it matters most. He's the kind of guy that could have 110 yards and 4 interceptions all game. But in the fourth quarter, if I'm still in the game and I have to have a play, I have no doubt in my mind he's making the play. That's why he's so great. So I would say C+, because you still always have that. That's where he's at right now. I don't think you can be any higher than where you're at as a B, though, because at some point you do have to factor in some of the decision-making and things like that. But C+, I think, is actually a pretty fair grade. We can check in on the text line and see where everything's at. Someone from the 816 says it's an A. With the teachers asking you why you didn't show your work and assuming you cheated on the test, we have a perfect score. Someone says a B is too high. There's other quarterbacks dealing with bad teammates. They mean probably just bad players. I don't think bad teammates in terms of that. But Herbert last night is one. Someone else says C+. Someone else says C. So kind of a mixed bag. Nope. Most people, I think, on the text line are in the same C to B range. You and I are very close, C+, B-, whatever. You know, we're basically the same grade.
Like, I asked this on social media last night, and I got answers from 100%, as in I got every answer on the test right, even if, you know, the lead up to it was messy. But I think there are people who understand, like, the idea that I think most people probably in your range, from the standard he has set for himself, it looks like a C effort. But there are a lot of mitigating factors that I just don't want to ignore. And I know we don't like diving deep into numbers. I know it feels the same way as it does about baseball, where you're like, stop, this is lipstick on a pig. Quit telling me these things are working if the result I'm watching is not. But every statistic outside of, and this sounds so stupid in the moment, I know, points to the fact that the Chiefs are a top 5 to 7 offense in the NFL. Considering the circumstances, that seems good. I think the points differential from the success that they have outside of that relates to the weapon-related problem. The fact that they don't have people they can trust. I'll be honest. I also put some of that on Andy Reid. To this day, and probably for the rest of time, Andy Reid gets inside the 20, and he just starts pulling out the weirdest magic tricks in an attempt to try to get it to work. And it works sometimes. Little Carson Wentz handoff thing, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, if we were doing a grade for the coaching staff, it'd be an A+.
Oh, I know. But like in the red zone, I give Andy a B, right? Because he can't help himself, or a C. Because in the red zone, he can't help him. But for the same reasons, that's why I can excuse away the better grade for Patrick Mahomes. I'd say just a solid B, right in the middle. Maybe we should do this as a segment. I'll just give grades for things, and
Professor,
you can tell me if I'm being too.
It's time for Professor Tapp. His grades for the week.
I actually have to submit my grades update next week.
How things looking so far? Anybody struggling? You know?
A couple struggling in the early going. We'll see.
Are you gonna help them out?
Part of the point of me putting the grades in is, you know, they have to, you know, they're essentially
is it just laziness?
You know? PIP. Yeah. I mean, I have that many things to turn in.
So
if you don't turn in one thing in my class, you're kind of screwed, or you just don't show up. I got one kid who doesn't show up, and I got a couple people not turning stuff in on time.
Other than that, I thought we said you work in a dock for attendance.
I said, well, I have to by university laws dock some. Attendance has to be something.
How much?
And I'm pretty lenient on it. I just said, you have to we do a lot of work in class. You have to be there sometimes.
Yeah. If they can get the projects done without being there, then fine. But if they can't get the projects done without being there,
in this case, it's both.
Okay.
Can't get the work done and not there. Well, then that's just a net loss.
Well, if any of your students are listening, there you go. You heard it from him directly. Oh. Drew, what's the grade you're giving?
It was too strong, but
I would say C+. I think for the reason of them winning the games, I was going to ask you, like, if they're 4-2, still a winning record, and are you still giving him a B?
They're not 4-2.
Well, I know.
That's part of my grading.
Well, so somebody said from the 816, I think it's like a group effort. His effort on his part is a B to B+, but the group project brings his grade down to a C. I think it's the opposite. Mahomes is the C or C plus, but the group project, because they're 6-0,
well, the group project makes it.
I mean, you could say if you were to grade the Chiefs' season, I would say B plus, A minus. They're undefeated. So I feel like you have to say A minus, but it's not. Mahomes' play is, I would say, C plus. Because I think you guys made the point, I don't know who it was, but
I guess
his standard has been, he set the standard being so high where watching him play, he's making the winning plays where if they're 4-2, I think it's a C minus. I think it, I mean, you could argue that if he's part of the reason they've lost two of those games, if it were the case, then he's lower. But I think it's a C plus because he's been the reason, case in point this past Sunday, he makes the play to end up winning the game. I would say C plus.
So here's the question I have, because for the people who give him a C, even you Gold, or the people who want to give him a grade below that, C plus. Sorry. I couldn't remember which one it was. C plus.
I need that GPA. I need C plus. I need the C plus.
C plus. Right. C plus. What is it about? This is the question I have for the lower grade. What is it that he is doing that you don't like? The interceptions, it may be an answer. Other than that, what is it about Patrick Mahomes' play that you were bothered by? Because when I watch him play, I'm not like, that's a man doing a lot of things wrong.
No, but that's why he's a C plus and he's not a D. I mean, at some point though, on both, if we're going
to
say results matter on, hey, they're 6-0,
they haven't lost. Because
there's some people that would just say like, hey, no matter what, if your team's undefeated, based on some of the texts we're getting, you think everybody should just have an A. It doesn't matter. We're just talking about one specific player here. That's why. Obviously, the team is undefeated. Nobody is all that upset with how things are going. But if we're talking about one player, and if your response is, well, they're 6-0, so it's automatically an A, then you're just saying that, like, basically, players' performances don't matter and all that. Like, yes, I know in this, like, team atmosphere, if I was actually in the locker room, you're
like
right.
A statistic
My performance wouldn't matter if the team is undefeated. Like, in this perfect world where we're talking about just judging one particular player, like, if you're judged for your job and you get graded, like, hey, the company might be doing well, but if your performance sucks, you still get a review. It doesn't mean that your review is automatically going to be great. There is still something to that. To answer your direct question of, like, wait, what is it? Yeah, I mean, when you're a quarterback, and if we think there has still been some bad decisions made along the way, that's going to weigh heavily. That's all.
Yeah, and I do think some of those picks in the early going, I guess what it is those picks that I thought were like gross, that's just a straight up bad decision. Yeah. Those were weeks 1 and 2. That's not what the interceptions have looked like the last couple of weeks. They're more.
I know, but you asked for the grade for the whole season, not grades week 3
sure.
through 6.
For sure. But I think that, like, what's happening is, like, he's pulling up his grade because I'm watching him play better over the last few weeks, which is making it easier to do this. And, like, some of it is like, someone's like, well, he's not averaging nearly as many yards. Averaging like 230 yards per game, 237 yards per game. That is his career low, 30 yards below his career low. Do you know the NFL average is 212 yards per game this year? They are actually currently 11th in passing yards per game. I know that's shocking, because it seems like, are they even passing the ball for any yardage at all? And the answer is, yeah, kind of. Some of the teams that are above them are just bad teams and got no choice but to throw, like Dallas, right? I don't care that they are the Jets. Those are two teams that are above.
A running back to give to,
good
honestly.
For you for throwing for more passing yards per game when you straight up can't play. The other part is the Chiefs have been playing from ahead a lot. We talk about the Chiefs playing games close. That was, for the longest time, the story on Mahomes was he's down 10 and making the comeback. That's not what they've been doing this year. They have been playing up on these teams instead. And when you play ahead on these teams, they can run the ball more. They can play different. All those things are just a little bit.
Last one on this, we got to move on. Someone says, typical professor, changing the goalposts after submitting the work and then being upset. We'll get back to this conversation, I'm sure, with Nate Taylor in the 1 o'clock hour. Let's talk some college football, though. All three locals did get wins over the weekend. Obviously, KU finally found a way to win against Houston. K-State with Avery Johnson were dominant in their performance out in Morgantown. Missouri survived a very close one against Auburn. Brady Cook went to the hospital mid-game, comes back, leads him on a game-winning drive. I don't really want to talk as much about what happened Saturday. It's already Tuesday. I want to talk about, though, a little bit of just what that win meant, because they had Alabama on the horizon, and here we are. The Sunflower Showdown might be taking place with KU and K-State, and I understand it's big for those schools. But nobody,
I mean, is
has
it big,
a big
for Kansas? Nobody, they haven't won that game since, like, the 80s.
It's still a big rivalry game. Yeah. Bigger no basketball. Game is bigger than what Missouri is playing this weekend, though. They're
that
playing Alabama. It's a de facto elimination game for the college football playoff.
That's exactly what it is. The winner of Alabama and Missouri, I would say, has a really good 70-80% chance, probably, based on each of their remaining schedules, to make the college football playoff. It is a massive game, especially because that Alabama game, I mean, that's a top 10 team in the country. That is not going to look like a nothing win on paper for Missouri. They were at one time the number one team in the country. It is playing in Tuscaloosa. It is all those things. If you, Missouri, can find any way to beat Alabama, you're going to look that way. Here's the problem. Is anyone convinced Missouri is all that good? Has Missouri at any point this year looked really, really good, like go down to Tuscaloosa and beat Alabama good? At multiple times this year, I've been really underwhelmed by Brady Cook. The coming back from the hospital.
Hard to be critical of him right now. Yeah.
Yeah. The coming back from the hospital to lead the game winning drive. I got no knock for that. But the other play outside of that, he has looked incredibly mediocre. Doesn't seem like they're good at getting or good enough at getting a player as good as Luther Burden the ball.
Still don't
enough.
Think they're coached well in game.
Agreed. And that's where I'm like, is a not well-coached team in-game going to go down to Tuscaloosa and get the win? It's the biggest game for Missouri probably since that MUKU game. I don't know. This is a massive game for them. There's probably been one or two in between that.
I mean, they played an SEC title game and stuff.
Sure,
before,
but I mean, this is right up there with a champ. But even when you're playing the SEC title game, sometimes it's playing for the playoffs, sometimes
but
it's
they,
not.
You know, you're asking the question, can they go down there and win? Absolutely, they can go down there and win. We all have watched Alabama the last couple weeks. This is not number two Alabama with Nick Saban in their heyday. They're a very good team, but this is a game Missouri can win. They obviously have to play a hell of a lot better, but you're right about just like the win resume stuff. You know, the good news is you said like, hey, are they that good? They don't have to be top four good.
Top 12
today, top 12 good is all they have to be. And if they don't have this one, the resume is just not going to be there. They could be a two loss team, but it doesn't matter. I mean, like they've
got
four
automatic bids for the SEC.
Oklahoma's not any good. We thought at one point, Drew, that was going to be a massive game on the schedule. Oklahoma looks awful, and then it's South Carolina, who will still be a tough game, but they're not the resume builder.
Nope.
Mississippi State and then Arkansas, like they have to have this one.
I think that, well, for the point going into the season, I think the thought was if they have two wins, you couldn't picture an SEC team not making it. But with Missouri's schedule, it always depended. I had a Gabe Diarmid on the podcast. Yeah. He covers Missouri. He said it depends on what the two losses are, because if they're to A&M and Alabama and say Oklahoma struggles, which they are struggling, he said, say, Arkansas isn't as good, or South Carolina, you know, what is your signature win? Where if you go to the committee, if you're Kansas State, you should be, if I were Kansas State, I would be rooting for Missouri in this game. As crazy as it sounds, because if you compare a 10-2 Kansas State team to if you compare an 11-1 K-State team who's beating an Alabama team, but if Alabama falters, K-State would have a bigger signature win, depending on how things go, than if they're going up against an Alabama team that is 10-2, they're not getting in.
I'm waiting for bloodshed, though. I still think this early in the season. I want anybody to get losses. Like Missouri loses, then it's both teams have two, right? Alabama lost two games.
Alabama has
two.
Two losses already.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like in that case, I'm rooting for Alabama. I want losses to stack up for somebody because
maybe I misheard. So I just want to make sure. You say you think K-State fans are rooting for Missouri to win.
No, I'm sorry. Flip.
Okay. That, okay.
They want that. That's what I thought you said.
Because that's
I'm
where
sorry.
I got. Yeah, you're good. I got confused because I think you said
they
the
both
other.
Want to have two
okay.
losses. Because
I'm like,
in
why would you want Alabama just be knocked out? Like, I had to knock them out. Correct. Get them to three. You know, like
they want Missouri to have two because if a 10-2 Missouri team, it's crazy though because you think SEC compared to Big 12, we're taking the SEC team, but in this. That's where, like, non-conference, K-State played the harder schedule non-conference compared to Missouri. That's why it matters. And to your point about Brady Cook, I think it was interesting. He hasn't had that one game where people are still, he needs to have a big game. You know, this is that game against Alabama where Brady Cook might have to win the game single-handedly for them. Like, I don't know how good they'll be able to run the ball effectively. They should try to because they've got a good running back duo. But Brady Cook might have to go and win them this game in Tuscaloosa in that environment. It's going to be interesting to see. I mean, it's the game of the week or one of the games of the week for a reason.
He did it in pretty desperate measures last week.
It was really impressive.
They needed him.
It was really impressive.
Yeah, to me, literally, to go to a hospital.
There's been a lot of Missouri fans, too, that have not been on his bandwagon at all.
If I go to the hospital, I'm not coming back on
this. And I also, I think you guys can text in if you're a Tigers fan. I think if you were to admit to yourself, there were some that felt a certain way about Brady Cook. You also not only saw him come back and lead you to a game-winning drive, but your backup, and I understand it's not the normal backup. The other backup is hurt, but seeing the other option at quarterback, you're foolish if you think there's a better option on that roster to be playing quarterback than Brady Cook.
Yeah, Drew came in and they couldn't move the ball down the field. So against Auburn, so please, yes, Brady Cook is definitely that guy.
Trash of the day.
I bring this one up because, like, we're headed to the airport here in a couple of days. So we go to New Zealand for this one, and they have instituted and posted a sign in the drop-off zone asking passengers and their drivers to limit their farewell hugs to a maximum of 3 minutes.
3 minutes?
This is a real thing. The photo in the sign says, max hug time, 3 minutes. For fonder farewells, please use the car park. That's how they call it, the car park over there. Look, so I get it. One, pretty funny. Two, I've witnessed, you drop a loved one off at the airport. I've witnessed, like, some people will have, like, you do the quick hug. Makes sense. No problem with that. You should. Quick hug. Not going to see him for a little while. They're going on a flight.
Sure.
But I've also seen some people will do, like wait, like, maybe, who knows? Maybe they were going to go out of town for 6 months and who knows? But unless you're, like, you're going away to, like, fight for this country.
To get deployed.
And getting deployed. Like, I don't get, like, do you need to sit there and hug for 3 minutes? Yeah, just walk. If that's the case, you do need to park and wait. Just walk them in and wait in the airport with them, especially in the old airport when you could really wait by the gate. 3 minutes is a long hug. That's a long embrace.
I just think if you're going to the drop-off zone, it's understood that this is under duress. It's like a race against the clock. You got to get your stuff out of the car. You got to get out of the car and you got to get moving. I always feel like I'm in a hurry if I'm in the drop-off area at the airport. I'm with you. If you want a 10-minute hug, well then park. Take the shuttle over. Walk them into the
lobby. Have you dropped your wife off of the airport anytime in the recently?
Not recently.
Okay. Like where you were traveling separately, she was going somewhere?
I think she's dropped me off at the drop-off area and we do the
hug.
A 30-second hug maybe. Say goodbye and then we move on. I think also some of that is handled in the when you're at home, right?
Yeah.
I make sure to tell the kids, oh, I'll miss you. I'll see you later. We give them hugs. We're not trying to do all that at the airport. The airports are flying out. Mm-mm. The goodbyes can happen before we get to the airport. I do think you should be given an exception if you're, in a uniform.
Oh, for sure.
I'm not here to hey, pal, I'm trying to get out of the car. Mm-hmm. As some guy's, in uniform hugging his wife goodbye. Like, no, I think we're okay there. But also, I think just park and let them come in.
Walk it, walk them toward as far as you can go before security.
Dude, before, 9-11, you could stand right by the damn gate. And take him to the airport.
But even at the old KCI, because
you can be hanging out
pretty much stand there and say, all right, I guess it is time for me to go through. You can
10 seconds later, I'll be through security.
Whereas we all know, if you've been to a new airport, you really can't go much further than.
I don't think you're thinking about how long a 3 minute hug.
Three
is.
Minute.
You and Drew should hug for 3 minutes and realize how long of a hug that is.
Come here, Drew.
Three minutes.
A 30-second hug is a long hug. That's a long hug.
Man, that's.
The sign, someone says, is code for hurry the F up and get out of the damn way. Other people are waiting to use the space. That's exactly right.
Well, it's a traffic thing. Remember, in the first month when people were complaining about how long the line was?
It's
getting inside the airport
change.
To drop off.
People hated change. It's fine. I love the new airport here in Kansas City. We all know the other one had some conveniences. But, man, when people come into town now, it's not embarrassing for starters. And if you get to the airport a little early, you're not what am I going to do here? There's nowhere to sit, nowhere to eat, all this kind of stuff. Bathrooms are clean. All of it is so much better.
Dominoes to the airport.
Oh, it looks like a real airport for a modern city. That's the trash of the day. Up next, we get to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Let's get the latest on the Jalen Watson front from Jeremy Fowler. Plus, the other Watson. What's going on with him?
Welcome in to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Every day at 11:30 with Cody and Gold on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan.
Well, if you're just joining us for the first time today, a little update on the injury front we got from Jeremy Fowler earlier today. As expected, Jalen Watson will undergo surgery in the coming days for that broken ankle. Test did confirm that injury, according to a source of his. Also, he mentions in the tweet, quote, outside chance he's back for a late playoff push. But his season very well could be over.
Hey, Vinny made it.
Broken ankle, broken thumb, same thing. It's obviously not great news as expected for Jalen Watson. A team that has a chance to make it to the Super Bowl every year, you always wonder around the AFC title game and the extra week between the Super Bowl, is there a chance the player comes back? But you have to operate as if Jalen Watson and Hollywood Brown are not coming back. We already know Rashee Rice is done for the season. We know Pacheco is slated to come back. There was a nice update on that yesterday on his social media. You may have seen he was, I don't call it running, but walking, jogging on a treadmill, which is progress, of course, from where he had been with his injury. But they have to operate like Jalen Watson's not going to be available for them going forward. And whether that is just relying on Nazi Johnson and Josh Williams, or as we discussed yesterday, is there somebody free agency or in a trade market that you can go and get mid-season to see if you can't at the very least add some depth to the cornerback room? Because we talk all the time about like going and getting better players.
Yeah, it's just bodies sometimes.
But you do need just a body, because let's say all of a sudden Josh Williams goes down for an injury. At some point, the numbers just aren't there. And that's kind of where we've been at with the wide receiver room, because even with the thin wide receiver room, thinking of another Watson, we're talking about Jalen. How about Justin Watson? Thought when they had all these injuries that he was going to be able to step up again and give them 350, 400 yards. And he's getting the snaps, but the production, surprisingly, maybe we shouldn't be surprised, I don't know, has not been there for him to this point.
I guess he's never been like a superstar, so I don't want to make it seem like he's something that he's not, right? Like, you and I never thought he was Justin Jefferson. He's never going to be Justin Jefferson. That wasn't the point. The point was, in previous times when they were in need of a wide receiver for a couple of weeks, Justin Watson was good to fill in that role, right? He'd show up, do a little work. Everybody'd feel kind of good about it. And we'd all move on with our happy ways. Last year, it might seem like more, but he finished with 460 yards. The year before that, 315. He had one catch for 8 yards, and there was no one left to throw to in that last game. No one. And Justin Watson only got one catch for 8 yards. He's got 7 catches for 95 yards so far this season. That would put him on pace for about 315, which is what he was in 2022. But he was a more effective wide receiver last year, and what I would call an even less than somehow wide receiver unit as far as opportunity goes than this year's team. Because for the first 8 weeks last year, they were trying to throw to other guys, not just Justin Watson. And then for the final 8 weeks, they had Rashee Rice to throw to for the entire season. So it was less than last year, and he was more productive. I'm starting to think he's just washed. A middling receiver whose production was always going to be somewhat limited maybe doesn't still have it when he's coming up on 30 years old. And counting on him for a third straight season to give you pretty good production was probably overshooting the mark. So because I don't see it. He hasn't been open at all.
Yeah, he hasn't. He's had the opportunity in terms of snaps, because of the injuries to go out and do that. He's the sixth receiver in yardage right now for the Chiefs. Now, on one hand, you can say, okay, that sounds about right. But on the other hand, he has 95. He has 95 yards, and including tight ends, that puts him sixth on the team right now in yardage. That's how.
Well, but sixth on this team in yardage.
That's my point. No, that's my point, Cody. Yeah. I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm saying that he can be sixth, and he has 95 yards, and that includes Travis Kelce, Noah Gray, and Rashee Rice, who of course is unavailable the rest of the year. So in terms of actual active wide receivers, Worthy with 198, Juju with 147, and then Justin Watson with 95. If you take out the injuries and the tight ends, Justin Watson still somehow has the third most receiving yards on this team.
Like
at 95.
Again, yeah, it's not, it's not nothing, obviously, but part of us just talking about this yesterday when I pointed out to you that until Travis Kelce gets another 50 yards, the number one wide receiver on this team from a production standpoint is Travis Kelce, or is Rashee Rice, who has been hurt for like weeks.
I think for Justin Watson, it's even make what I thought he was still going to be able to do is make the, hey, it's 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8, and you need someone that Mahomes trusts to move the chains occasionally, once or twice a game. And we haven't seen that. I wasn't expecting him to go out and have 7 catches for 55 yards, 70 yards. I always think he was going to have 3 catches for 35 yards, but one was a crucial third down conversion to move the sticks and seal a win. Like that's the kind of stuff we saw last year.
Or he'd be open 20 yards down the field, and he had one of those passes, I think, in maybe the game against the Ravens or the Bengals, where he's the Bengals maybe between like the two defenders and Mahomes triple faked a throw.
But at the same time, you started it with what is Justin Watson to begin with? And so that's where it's like, nobody should be like all that upset with what's happened. He's a special teams player that has stepped up in a big way for the last couple seasons. that no team is counting on him to become their number two receiver, and he's been put in that spot due to injuries. And so far, this production is probably what we all would have thought was going to happen a year or two ago, but our expectation went up a little bit because he had a nice season helping out this team. It's why they brought him back on a two-year deal a year ago, whatever it was.
Because if he's a 500-yard receiver, I wouldn't be complaining right now. If he was just 25, 30 yards a game, cool. He's giving me what I'm expecting out of Justin Watson, even with the guys down. But to your point, this is, goes back. Like, yes, what was it? Sunday's game. The best wide receiver from a yardage perspective had 19 yards. 19. Now, look, some of this speaks to the simple
thing. They ran the ball 40 times, didn't they?
Yeah, and some of this speaks to the simple thing, which is the Chiefs need to trade for a wide receiver. But if Justin Watson was performing the way DeMarcus Robinson used to produce in this offense before he was gone, you'd feel a little bit different because then you'd be like, well, all right, they'll throw it to Kelce. Gray's emerged as a nice weapon, at least. He's not a bad player. You could throw it to him sometimes. Then you're getting your 30 yards a game out of Justin Watson. Fine. Well, then everyone else is going to get 20 yards a game, and we're going to hope every third game we complete a 60-yard bomb to Xavier Worthy, and that's where we're getting a majority of his stuff. Because right now, who is the possession wide receiver that isn't a tight end? It doesn't exist. It's not Sky Moore. We thought it'd be Justin Watson. It's not him. It's no one. It doesn't exist. They have turned Noah Gray into their possession wide receiver, which works okay. I'm not here to complain. He's coming off the single best game of his career, career high in receiving yardage. But it's like, at some point, you're going to need that guy. I think it's why I've started to, like, as I look for those guys, why I've leaned into being okay with guys like DeMarcus Robinson or players like that. I don't mean him specifically, but players like that. Well, is I want someone who runs a pretty good 8-yard cut. You know,
I got another name for you. I mean, he's been hurt. Maybe that scares you. He's been on IR the last 4 weeks, but he's coming back to practice this week for the Carolina Panthers. No, not Deontay Johnson. Adam Thielen, probably not going to cost you much at this point. A veteran that has been in this league for a while that can do what you just said. Like, add him to the list. Let's not forget about him. He's been hurt, so people have kind of forgotten the name. But if he's healthy, which he's coming off IR soon, that's another name I think you call the Panthers on. And he might even be cheaper to acquire than Deontay Johnson.
He's essentially the aging version of the exact same thing I said. So I can't fight it. He was actually pretty good in Carolina last year.
He was.
The other part is like, and like, look, coming off the injury always makes me feel better somehow. It's like, well, he already got hurt. Probably won't get hurt again. That's a stupid logic. I know.
Hamstring too. So
yeah. But in a lot of ways, it's like, I feel like they're going to let it get healed before he comes back because he's sure as hell not saving the Carolina Panthers.
The only issue with Thielen would be it would go against what the Chiefs typically do. Give up assets for a 34-year-old player.
Sure.
That's
but
the
only 1 year.
I'm with you, but that would be like if you ask me, like, should they trade for him? Yes. Why could you see them not doing it? Well, because he's 34.
This might be worth exploring with. This might be us. I'm speaking out loud a little bit, where it might be worth us having a conversation with a cap expert, because here's part of the truth with where the Chiefs stand. They don't have a lot of money. They currently on their active cap, the way that is settled, don't have a lot of free cash to spend on wide receivers as it currently sits. So are there still players remaining on this team in which you can rework their contract that gives you more financial flexibility this year? Or do you have to pay the premium in order to pay more in draft capital to allow bad team to eat the dough for you, to agree to eat as much money as humanly possible? This is where it might be harder for them to find a trade partner. Is it not only they got to convince the Panthers to give up Adam Thielen or Deontay Johnson for the price they want, but you got to convince them to eat every last cent of the money in order to make this work, because that's going to add in a whole nother layer or difficulty essentially to it, right? That's where I guess I'm at least wondering the question.
Yeah, I'll just push back. Like, I just threw Thielen's name out there because he's coming off of IR, and someone texted and said, so then they'd have two washed-up guys. Adam Thielen was a 1,000-yard receiver last year, so let's not compare him to Justin Watson.
Justin Watson might have 1,000 yards in his career.
Yeah, so like, that's just not a fair comp. I understand this year Thielen has like 115 yards. Well, he's missed four games. He's on IR right now.
By the way, 115 is 20 more yards than Justin Watson had. And Justin Watson's played all six games, and Adam Thielen's played like two.
Yeah, it's not even a close comp whatsoever. But as I said, if the Chiefs were to not be interested in him, the reason would be he's 34 years old, even though I think for a half-season rental at this point, essentially, or a little over half-season rental, I would be fine. Why not? Real question, a conditional seventh. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, it's a joke question. I thought you were finished, and then you mentioned the conditional seventh.
Go ahead.
It was a joke.
I don't think there's such thing as a conditional seventh necessarily, is there? Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, it's either no pick or a seventh. Mm-hmm. If he stinks, we won't even give you a pick. We just love the player.
For free.
Could you imagine?
For free.
Or it's a pick swap in the seventh versus like you just get our seventh if that's the case. No, the joke I was going to make is should the real question is, for all the things that people have tried to beat the Chiefs, should they consider reporting Brett Veach to the EEOC for ageism? Because I do not think he's an equal opportunity employer. Brett Veach hates the elderly. That man will not employ a person over 31 years of age. He's actively not employing them. He's got a pattern, man. They could go after his ass at this point.
That's been a pretty good strategy.
Yeah, I know.
It's been a pretty good strategy.
Turns out, I don't care. I'm actually totally fine with it. Mm-hmm. It's been a very effective strategy and one that other teams should probably try to emulate. But bad teams pay the bad team tax. Bad teams need veterans over a certain age. We've established Brett Veach will pay a third contract to one type and only one type of player, a future Hall of Famer. The end.
Yeah.
It's the end of the list.
Yeah, and to your point, though, financially with where they're at, you know, this year, prorated number, we already looked it up for Deontay Johnson yesterday, prorated number on Adam Thielen, he's making cap hit is $9.9 million, but we're already, you know, heading into week 8 of the season, so that's not a crazy number. Next year, he's due $8.4 million, but you could cut him after this year if you're like, hey, and it's $5 million. So they could either have 35-year-old Adam Thielen on their team for $8.4 million, or they could not have 35-year-old on their team if they traded for him and pay $5 million to let him walk. Neither one is like devastating.
No.
Wow. Weird. Good word choice. There you go.
It's not a bad, I mean, it's $5 million.
It's almost like we've been doing the show together for 5 years almost. Yeah.
You know, the Chiefs, that's actually something that Brett Veach probably should deserve more credit for. They take on dead cap money just like anyone else in the league. But the reason they've been able to afford more players is because they take on less dead cap than most teams. Like, I mean, right now, the Bills have more dead cap than the Chiefs. Most of the good teams do. Because at some point, you do have to take on some money for players that you don't want to pay. Chiefs have done it for Frank Clark. They've done it all the way back to Eric Berry or a million other players. But, like, the Broncos have $78 million in dead cap. The Chiefs are the fourth.
Russell Wilson.
Yep. The Chiefs are the fourth lowest in the NFL. $11 million. I mean, that's it. $11 million.
That was not always the case. They finally kind of got things under control. They're in a much better cap situation than they have been. Believe it or not, I know they've been winning, but they're actually in a better cap situation today than they were a year or two ago.
Yeah, I think it used to be.
Younger roster, don't have the dead cap carryover stuff. They're just in a better spot.
They also, like, they were worse, as you know, they were worse at doing it when it was John Dorsey. Like, they had worse problems when it was John Dorsey.
Yeah, he was a great talent evaluator. He did not have the right people around him to manage the cap at the time.
No.
Complete opposite.
Do you want to know, just out of curiosity, the Bills, by the way, $65 million in dead cap. They're trying to think, they're actually in much better shape next year and the year after that, because this was supposed to be a rebuild year for them. Kudos to them for being still highly competitive, even though they have $65 million in dead cap. The Eagles have $59 million. The Chargers, $55 million. I mean, these are teams that are trying to win this year. The Packers have $52 million because of Aaron Rodgers. Like, there are teams that could have better players on their roster. The Chiefs are maxed out. They only got $4 million in cap space, but at least they're only carrying $11 million in dead cap versus every other team in the league. Otherwise, the Chiefs would be over the cap, or they wouldn't have paid Creed Humphrey, or they would have had to let some other player walk, or they wouldn't have been able to sign Kareem Hunt. That's the other part about their cap situation. They've had to sign like five players they weren't planning on signing because of the injuries. It's nuts.
Yeah, it adds up. It adds up over time. So we'll see. I know tomorrow we'll talk even more about some other names that are out there potentially for trade targets as well. Remember, the trade deadline normally would be a week earlier, but they have pushed it back. So we got to, you know, yes, we want them to make a move now, but they actually have a little more runway than they have had in any other year in the NFL after the NFL decided to push the deadline back to, what is it, November 5th, I guess that'd be Tuesday, November 5th. In the afternoon. Reminder a little bit later on today, 1 o'clock hour, Nate Taylor from The Athletic will join us. I'm sure we'll get into the same conversation. Plus, we'll ask him if he agrees with Pete Prisco. So Pete Prisco over at CBS Sports was talking about, when's the loss coming for Kansas City? And if not, are they going to actually run the table and get to 17-0? Here's what he had to say.
Buffalo. Late in the season, it's going to be the Bills. That's the only one I can see where they'd have a chance to lose. The rest of those, they run the table. If they win against the Bills, they will run the table and go undefeated. I do not see a threat there. They're, like BMAC said, they have the quarterback. What he has to do, what he can do, and he's not putting up gaudy numbers, but he has to go get points, he can go get them. And that defense is playing lights out. They're outstanding. Steve Spagnuolo is a great defensive coordinator. Andy Reid and that group are great offensive minds. They're the team to beat, and they have a real chance to go undefeated.
Wow.
The chances of it happening go up drastically if they get past that Bills game. We've been talking about that for a while.
Does that mean 9-0?
Let's see. They're 6-0 now. They've got the Raiders 7-0. Bucks is 8-0.
Panthers.
And Panthers as well, yeah. So, I mean, that it sets up really nicely for them to do that. I've told you, I can't have like a real non-hype, like it's still a hypothetical, but like a real conversation, like I actually think it's going to happen until they're at least 10-0. I mean, that's basically post-Bills week. Because we don't know, health is so much of the equation with this. Yes, we can go on the schedule and like win. Health. We already know this team has been so banged up. What else is going to happen? Both for the Chiefs and also for an opponent. Later in the year where they're going to play the Texans. Are the Chiefs healthier, actually? As in Pacheco's back? As in they've traded for a receiver? That might be the case. Or the Texans all of a sudden. They already have Nico Collins hurt, but maybe Tank Dell's unavailable. Like, all this can change. That's why I'm not as, I guess, as optimistic that it's going to happen as it sounded like you were earlier. I think there's a chance, of course. 5% right now is what I would put on them actually running the table all the way and getting to 17-0. We looked up the Vegas odds on this. 11-1 that the Chiefs go 17-0, which is an implied probability of around 8%. So
I think it's 15%, yeah. 10%, you know.
If they get to the Bills game and beat them, it is going to jump up for all of us.
I guess part of it is I'm just assuming they're to the Bills game. And look, I understand that NFL teams can't think that way. But, I mean, look at the schedule. A team who we can talk on later in the week, they got all the reason in the world to want a curb stomp, who hasn't been able to figure out their quarterback situation. A Bucks game that looks dramatically different than it looked 8 hours ago. True. They might be without their number one and number two wide receivers by the time that game starts. At least one of them. Chris Godwin's out for the season. He's having surgery on a fractured or dislocated ankle.
That was nasty
and
last
night. Yeah, it was gross. And then the Panthers were the single worst team in the NFL. That's the number one overall pick. And yeah, that game will be too close. It'll be 17-14 and we'll come in on that money and hate life and not understand why.
For sure, yeah.
It was 17-14. It's fine. I've long come to accept that reality. But I'm just assuming, like, I mean, the stretch right now going into that Bills game, it's looking pretty favorable to be walking into that game 9-0. You had told us yesterday, you thought, and obviously you think they're going to be 9-0 by the time that game starts too.
Absolutely.
I think that's part of the reason I'm at 15% is because 3 weeks from now when they're 9-0, I'm going to think it's around 15%. So I'm just putting it at that now because I think they're winning those games. And it comes down to the same thing. If I don't think they can win each of the next three games, then I give them a 0% chance of going undefeated. If I don't, you know.
Right. Well, yeah.
But like, yeah. Or if I just don't think that they should 100% of the time win all those games, then I should just put it at 2%, 1%, put it down to negative numbers. It doesn't matter. But because I just think they're so much better than those teams. I'm not even worried about it.
Yeah, it's fun to dream a little bit, too, and just imagine that in a three-peat campaign, you also might be going for 17-0. I hope that's a real conversation we can have in a month and a half from now. Because, boy, oh, boy, would that be fun. You think people are haters on this franchise and this team? Wait until they find out that not only are they going for a three-peat, but they might be trying to become one of the rare teams to go undefeated in the regular season. And then we can let the 72 Dolphins start really sweating. I can't wait. That'd be amazing if we get there. But we are a long ways away from having that become a real, real conversation, in my opinion. Like, it's fun to play the hypothetical game, but it's also October 22nd.
Sure. So we don't have to look at it quite the same way. I understand. But it's officially
the countdown will be
now.
The countdown will be fully on, you know, when we get to week 11 and, you know, and that kind of stuff. Then the countdown gets on, and I think you can start realistically planning it out and seeing how can they get there, and then we can have the conversations that would be fun, which would be the, oh, do they play the starters or not kind of stuff. We'll have plenty of those when the time comes. I think the answer is yes, if you're wondering. Andy Reid, to me, with being a player's coach, having a chance to chase history, is not going to bench Patrick Mahomes for his legacy in week 18 against the Broncos if they're 16-0. I just don't see it, man, unless he's banged up.
No, seems pretty unlikely.
They would have a bye week after that game.
No, they're not. They're not.
They would have a bye after the Broncos game anyway.
I don't care. You can have the most conservative coach on the planet. No team can realistically walk into a locker room in which a team is 16-0 and say, guys, we're not going for seven. Screw that. Not a single person.
And you're giving them 2 weeks off at that point. I don't like that.
Yeah, no, it's fine. It's fine. The key part of that Buffalo thing is if they walk into that game 9-0, they can essentially, in my mind, win that game and be the number one seed, which means if they're already the number one seed, they're only three games away from being a three-time Super Bowl champion, three-time consecutive Super Bowl champion.
Someone saying we're jinxes for Minshew's going to have a huge performance on Sunday. Look, I wish I had the power to jinx the Chiefs season. I wish I was that powerful, but I am not. I don't think Cody is either. Drew, maybe. Maybe with Drew's Cincinnati stuff, maybe he's powerful enough to conjure that up. But no.
No, I don't.
If they're going to lose, they're going to lose. But the jinx stuff, just not a big believer in that.
Look, the overall. Chiefs can beat everybody except for the one team that I root for. It doesn't matter to me. They can go ahead and go undefeated. It's fine.
Why do you want that?
Excuse me?
Well, until we get to the... We just wait until we get to
the
playoffs.
They already beat your team, dude.
In a game that doesn't matter.
Okay. Up next, we'll get to what's trending here.
It's the regular season.
We're talking about the perfect season.
Dude, if they're undefeated, what are you walking in there? I'm confident. Teams undefeated in the regular season?
Yes.
Okay.
That's delusional.
Up next, the Chiefs are going to be, Chiefs are going to get to 17-0, and Ja'Marr Chase is going to say, we're still the best team in the AFC. He's still going to be saying that. Anyway, We'll get to what's trending, and then let's talk about an actual contender to the Chiefs in the AFC. It's not in Cincy, it's in Baltimore. Coming up next.